The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. I'm broadcasting live and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Just finished meeting a few moments ago with the set designer who designs the finest television studio sets in America, and our set will be going into construction, and it will literally be as nice as Fox or CNN or NBC. Hopefully it'll be up and ready to go in a month. It'll be nice. You can watch today's show by going to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Several issues today. Our issue of the day, I'm going to ask, what should we do to encourage more young people, especially those who are frustrated at seeing the failures of their parents and grandparents' generation, deal with our social issues? What can we do to get them involved? Then my guest in our third segment of the program is Christopher Hellman. He is a senior research analyst at the National Priorities Project, and we're going to examine something that no one on the left or the right in the current presidential races wants to talk about. Oh, except one person, Ron Paul. Oh, stupid me, he doesn't exist, does he? Because Fox and ABC and NBC and all the networks decided Ron Paul simply is irrelevant. Okay, I can understand that. If irrelevant means someone who wants to cut the military-industrial budget down, get us out of Iraq and Afghanistan, close down the military bases in the Federal Reserve, have one flat small tax that everybody pays, rebalance the budget, yeah, I could see where you'd want to make him irrelevant. So I'm following up on this today. And thank you, John Stewart, for paying attention to the fact that nobody wants Ron Paul even discussed. Why? Because there might be a contagion. One of his ideas that could actually help the world might actually leak out into our consciousness. Anyhow, we're going to talk about the long-term impact of the $8 trillion military budget. The National Security Complex has spent $8 trillion. What do we have to show for it? Latest on health and healing. Got a lot to share. Let's begin. Now, I talk a lot about different foods, of course, eaten together or eaten on a regular basis that are good for us. The latest of these is red grapes. Now, there's black grapes, blue grapes, white grapes, and red grapes. And the darker the color, the more power they have for healing because they have a nutrient called resveratrol. And this is the latest on this. It's resveratrol. We know it's a powerful antioxidant. It's in the skin of the grape, and it's in some other foods as well. Why should we consume these grapes or grape juice? Because it lowers our risk of heart disease, and it allows us to live a longer life. Now, all the antioxidants are good, but unlike other antioxidants such as the anthocyanins, which allows all your color, like raspberries, to be red and strawberries kind of a off-red and blueberries a blue of their color, are an integral part of their fruit. And plants produce resveratrol only in response to a fungal or bacterial attack. Let me explain that again. Resveratrol is nature's natural antibiotic to the plant. It's a fungicide. It's natural. And it is synthesized by the grape plant in order to survive a biological attack. Let me quote Mike Adams, who came up with something interesting on this. Quote, what this means is that the more natural fungi and bacteria a plant is exposed to, the more resveratrol it will produce. That's why if a grape plant is repeatedly sprayed with synthetic fungicides, and grapes are among the most pesticide-intensive crops cultivated, the resveratrol content in the full fruit will be very low. Conventionally grown grapes, in other words, contain relatively low levels of resveratrol. Wild grapes, on the other hand, or organic grapes, the kind I grow, I have 5 different types of grapes growing right now on my property, and they're all grown without any sprays. They're naturally fertilized. And I did something I thought would really work. I grew them on trellises with a natural shade of other plants. So the other plants provide the shade so it doesn't overburn the plant as it's developing, and really great, abundant grapes. In fact, there are pictures of the grapes in my vineyard up on GaryKnoll.com. They were just put up there. So what this means is, the more natural the grape, without sprays, or wild grapes, they're going to contain humongous quantities of resveratrol, because that's how they survive in the wild. In fact, when I'm planting my vegetables or greens, I always plant mustard throughout all of them. You'll suddenly see this large, rust-looking green leaf. It's big. It's about maybe 7 to 12 inches high and of the same across. And I plant them in every single species of plant, except garlic and onions. Why? When an insect bites into a mustard leaf, it is so strong that it repels them. So it's a natural repellent. By the way, they're also good in salads and stir fries. And to juice a little bit, if you're coming down with a cold, will help kill all the different types of bacteria and viruses in your throat. And that's why natural wines, naturally fermented, no chemicals, no sulfates, have higher levels of resveratrol. And that can help the program cell death, meaning you can get rid of cells that need to die and you can protect cells that need to live, which means a process by which cancer cells commit suicide and kill themselves. This helps cancer stop from growing, and studies have also shown that resveratrol can make chemotherapy more effective. It can weaken viruses, including influenza and HIV, and counter the effects of a high-fat diet. So, when you're looking for grapes because you want to be healthier, only eat organic grapes. A Rhode Island hospital identifies fish oil's impact on cognitive and brain structure. Now, this is the latest. This comes from a major study, and it was presented at the International Conference on Alzheimer's Disease. Here's what it says. They have found in this study a positive association between fish oil supplements and cognitive function, as well as differences in brain structure between those who use fish oil and those who do not. So if you want to have a healthier brain with less brain atrophy and less inflammation in the brain, which can lead to all forms of conditions such as Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, then you need to have omega-3 fatty acids. Now, there are two ways of getting omega-3 fatty acids. You can get them through fish oil, and you can get them through non-fish oil. You just have to be very diligent in how to combine your non-fish oils. But it's still good news for your brain. I believe in exercising 6 days a week. I believe in doing a pre-exercise drink, a post-exercise drink, and combining exercises, meaning power biking, resistance work in a gym, and then either power running or power walking. Here's one of the reasons why. This is the newest study on the subject of exercise and disease, and it says the following. This is after they studied 400,000 people, and it was published in the Lancet Medical Journal. A large study found that as little as 15 minutes of physical activity a day can reduce the risk of dying by 14% and can increase your lifespan by 3 years. Okay, that was moderate exercise, 15 minutes a day. So does that mean if we exercise for an hour, that would go up to 60% reduction in cancers and, 12 years added on to our life? It's entirely possible. So the more exercise, up to an hour that you do, and that's without even taking those supplements. Green tea, white tea, red tea, black tea, oolong tea, they're all good for you because they all contain what is called epigallocatechin gallate, or ECGC. Here's the latest in the Journal of Biological Chemistry. It says that the tea polyphenols are important for congenital disease. And a lot of children have, let's say, over-secrete insulin in response to protein intake, which leads to severely depressed blood glucose levels that can result in death. So if you have any kind of congenital condition, take your green tea. I'm going to suggest at the very low, 200, better, 800, really good, 1,000 milligrams a day. You can take capsules. There's two ways of looking at food. Either you consume food that tastes good to you, develop taste, acquire taste, that gives you a certain mouthfeel, aftertaste, satisfies your hunger, a certain satiety value, or you eat foods that may do all that, but specifically you're eating because you want to do something good for your health. I see no reason that you can't do both. I believe that you can make healthy foods phenomenally delicious. In fact, coming up in the next 9 months, I will have a big coffee table book out, and it will have big pictures of gourmet vegan dishes that are all nutritional powerhouses. But before then, here's the other side of that. If you eat foods without considering the nutrition benefits or the energy benefits, then you're going to have a downside. This is from Health Day News. A daily hot dog feeds diabetes risk. Let me quote this. Eating red meat, especially processed red meat, such as hot dogs, increases your risk of type 2 diabetes. It also found you can significantly lower your diabetes risk by replacing red meat with healthier proteins, such as nuts, whole grains. And this was done at Harvard School of Public Health. They looked at data over a 20-year period and over 200,000 participants. And those who had diabetes, developed diabetes, almost always had higher amounts of processed meat, bacon, and sausages, and the meat on pizza, salami, and pastrami's, and hot dogs. This was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And finally, high fiber diet can lower your risk of colon polyps. This is says brown rice, dried fruit, beans, peas, lentils can help prevent precursor to cancer. This was published on Medline Plus. So those of you who are following the diet that I've been advocating, you're much less likely to develop polyps, which then lead to cancer. This was a Nutrition and Cancer peer-reviewed journal, and this was done at Loma Linda University. So good for you for making the right choices. They all add up to your benefit. Now, I'm going to, before we cut for a break, I'm going to give you our issue of the day, and then you can call in on it, and then we're going to go to our guest. This is from someone who I hired because of this essay. This is from Jeremy. I think he's 24 years old. And I had asked the larger issue on my radio program, what should we be doing to encourage more of our youth in America to focus their energies on social issues that are important to all of us? quote, when I take a good look at those in my age group, I see a generation defined by disengagement. We are disengaged from ourselves and from each other. We are disengaged from the institutions that govern us. And we are disengaged from the very planet that gives us life. We have proven ourselves adept at retreating into a virtual world of utter insignificance. We thoughtlessly become mirrored in a swamp of social media whose contents, by and large, range from trivial to vile. We choose to waste hours a day participating in egomaniacal orgies of Facebook and Twitter. Our preoccupation with informing our cyber friends about pressing issues like how we ran out of shampoo this morning or how we found that extra pickle on our sandwich does nothing to foster a culture of narcissism and takes away from time that could be spent engaging in meaningful dialogue with an actual human being. Not to be outdone by our online personas, we skillfully manage to distance ourselves during our face-to-face interactions, too. After a long work week, we meet up and reach for some alcohol or drugs, looking to get wasted and stoned. We drink and smoke and end up presenting to the world a shallow and base version of ourselves. We wake up feeling terrible, having a few laughs over a mind-numbing debauchery that ensued and get ready to go out and do it all over again. We never consider the physical, mental, and emotional toll this behavior has on us and our relationships with others. Why should we? We're too focused on the really important stuff happening around the world, like Kim Kardashian's new designer purse and the box score for last night's big game. We're more concerned with voting for an American idol than voting for a congressperson who might actually give a damn about preserving our civil liberties. We hang on to every asinine utterance that comes out of Lady Gaga's mouth, yet we won't listen to the cries of millions of our own citizens now living in poverty due to the crafty machinations of Wall Street bankers. We excitedly run to the store to pick out the newest video game simulating the atrocities of war, yet we turn a blind eye to the wholesale annihilation of hundreds of thousands of innocent civilians at the hands of our taxpayer-funded military-industrial complex overseas. And while we're at the first ones to pay lip service to going green and saving the environment, the fact is we remain largely ignorant and apathetic when it comes to our incredibly wasteful culture and its devastating global consequences. But that stuff is so depressing. How can we change all that? That would require effort. That would require focus and engagement with reality. This is sometimes to our generation is capable of. But time is running out for us to sign off Facebook and dare to take a critical look at the state of this country and world. As soon as we wake up to the reality of our lives and the world around us, we can begin to change it for the better. So toss away those shots of alcohol, shut off your iPod, and connect with the extraordinary power of the human spirit that lies within. It's time to engage. End quote. Your thoughts. How do you feel that we can reach out to the youth and the youth then organize and participate actively in saving our society? 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888 is our number. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. We're going to go to our guests in about 3 or 4 minutes now. Then we're going to take your calls. I'd like to hear what you have to say on this subject. when you call in. How do we get the youth of America, or how are the youth in this audience going to start participating actively in making it a better world? But first, just a few minutes for our special. We haven't had one in quite some time. And I'm going to give you two specials today. The first one, because we've been out of inventory on it, we just got it back in today. It's Null Trim. This is a very carefully formulated natural vegan protein shake with extra vitamin C, B12, and iron. It's a cherry vanilla flavor. It's 14 ounces, which is 3 pounds. And you get 10 grams of protein per serving. And you have 48 servings per container. And it's delicious and nutritious. So a lot of people have always enjoyed the Null Trim, so we brought it back for those who joined this. And that's one special, and you're going to get that at a good price today. And all the money goes to this non-commercial station. By the way, I don't have any of the common allergens in here, so you don't have dairy. It's a strictly vegan product. That's one. And you're saving 50%. Our second product is something I haven't offered in eons. We just got it back again just today in inventory. Our manufacturing plant moved almost 2 months ago, and so we've been out of stuff. Now we're getting it back in today. This is the Proanthice Adidins, and here's the ingredients. This is one of those really superstars. You're getting resveratrol in here, quercetin, vitamin C, and Proanthice Adidins from grapeseed powder. 200 milligrams of that alone. That's a humongous amount. So the quercetin, 500 milligrams, vitamin C, 500 milligrams, or resveratrol, 15 milligrams. This is your Proanthice Adidin tablets. It's all natural. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing to take each day. I take it every day. I've been out of it for almost 3 months, so I haven't had a chance to take this. So here's the deal. Two separate products. You get 2-for-1 Proanthice Adidins. Buy one and you get a second one free. Plus, I'm going to give you a $40 video, Mind Power, Rejuvenating Your Mind and Memory Naturally. And this is a very important special. This was on PBS stations. And in this, you're going to learn how to keep the brain and body healthy and strong, how to optimize brain function, how to improve memory and cognition, specific protocols to prevent reverse brain disease in this special, in this really important hour and 16-minute special. Some of the best anti-brain aging experts in the world are in here. Now, you're getting that free in addition to buying one and getting one free. So it's a tremendous value. It's tremendous. You're going to save a lot on this. So Proanthice Adidins, buy one, get one free, plus get a video, and or buy Null Trim, the cherry vanilla protein shake, and buy one, get one free. In either case, call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Now, we're going to bring our guest up in a moment, but first I wanted to hear what you had to say. So let's go over here, and let's see. We have Natalia from Los Angeles. Hi, Natalia.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Gary. We spoke about a year ago, and we were talking about alternative energy about a year ago, and I don't think you remember me, but I'm happy to be talking again. And this time my commentary is related to a sustainable movement that's going on, and a lot of people don't come on board with these ideas because it takes, like you said, a lot of effort. And dealing with all the homeless people and trying to get them to do things when nobody accepts them because they have a record of some kind. And so there's so many obstacles in our way, and all the time we try to do something, we're turned, back from doing things. So I really want to encourage people to be more trustworthy, to help more, and to respect others, and to ask a lot of questions, because this is a society who doesn't question things. my big concern is that there's not just the American Indian and the American Native Americans are everybody who were born in this continent, and that we should treat ourselves as real brothers and really look out for each other. That's my message. I hope some people will embrace the fact that we are brothers and there is no boundaries between us, but we need to trust ourselves again.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate that, Natalia. I would add a few things. First, let's get over this idea that homeless people have records. Not true. The vast majority of homeless people today are just common citizens. I'll tell you what, I wasn't going to do this, but now I will. For the people in my audience who would like to see what it is to be homeless and how these are just regular people who have graduated from college, who engineers and architects and school teachers, who are now living in poverty, meaning they're living out of their homes, frequently out of their cars. I'm driving this afternoon with my film crew over to Lakewood, New Jersey, where there's a little tent city there. It's a little group of 50 different families who are living in the woods, and they've made this makeshift little tent city for themselves. The county doesn't want them, the state doesn't want them, the city doesn't want them, and their neighbors don't want them. So much for neighborly love and not judging people till you have a chance to know them. When I asked, did anybody come out to speak with you, the answer was no, but they're sure they're not going to like them. Maybe because of what you said, maybe this preconceived notion that if you're homeless or poor, you must be a minority who's committed a crime or a violent crime, and therefore you're automatically scared and you have every right to be scared, right? No, you don't. If we want to deal with an issue, let's at least approach it without preconceived notions. So I'm going out there. Someone would like to come out and see how I film my documentaries and see some of the people who are struggling. I'll be in Lakewood, New Jersey, and I'll get you a specific address. It's near a bridge, and so that you drive out there today. I'll be filming from about 2:30 till probably 4:30, a couple hours I'll spend with them, and that's going in my new film on Poverty, Inc. But I appreciate you bringing us to our attention that we should treat everyone always with dignity and respect. Let's say hello to Stephen from Santa Barbara. Hi, Stephen.
Gary, Stephen here. I just called about a few weeks ago about rebelling in school, and I wanted to continue this on about how I've been raised to follow the rules and do whatever the authority says to make it in this world, but I notice we're not raised to rebel, and we haven't had any specific situations that make our actions radical. There's been nothing that has made us stand up and fight. We don't know where the country's going. We don't know how to rebel. We need organization. We need leaders, people to look up to. I mean, where are our Malcolm X's, you know? Nothing huge has happened in this generation.
Okay, let's stop for a moment, all right? Two calls from California, and I appreciate that. But let's look at it from a little different point of view. Just shift your perspective for a moment.
Okay.
Historically, when Dr. Dean was head of the Democratic committee and was running for president, he got angry once. Remember when he got angry? And immediately that was a kiss of death. The Democrat says, got angry, got to go. As if being angry, no matter how legitimate the anger was based upon, was no longer acceptable. So the Democrat says, don't be angry, always be a Clinton, I feel your pain. No, Bill, you only feel the pain when your zipper doesn't completely... So the Democrats betrayed their base, the liberal base. They betrayed the unions, they betrayed the environment. And instead of saying, we're angry at this, you lied to us. You gave us NAFTA and GATT. You promised us that you would pay attention to our needs, and you're looking at the corporate needs. And on the Republican side, we're for small government, and we don't want the government in our lives. And then immediately create the largest fascistic state of overreach, suspending habeas corpus, and illegally with FISA, listening in on all of her phone calls and reading her emails, engaging in illegal wars, and funding them to the tune that we've never seen before. But that seemed to be all right. In other words, as long as you were creating a humongous government spending on outrageous amounts of the military-industrial complex, that was okay. When you were giving largest and benefits to the oil cartels, gas cartels, the big pharmaceutical companies, big agri, insurance companies, that's okay. But by God, don't let that poor American have any more benefits. That's what's crippling America. You think? I don't think. So now you've got two reasons that you've been lied to by all the Republicans and all the Democrats. But some independents, like Ron Paul, he really is independent. He pretends to be a Republican, but he's more of a libertarian. And Bernie Sanders and Dennis Kucinich and the Democrats have kicked Dennis. They keep trying to kick him under the bus, and he just keeps holding on to the sides. But you see, poor Dennis could never be president, not because he doesn't have good views. Let's get out of Afghanistan. Let's get out of Iraq. Let's get rid of the Federal Reserve. Let's stop giving gigantic money bailouts to corporate America. Let's put a moratorium on home foreclosures. Let's get rid of all student loans. No, Dennis, we can't do any of that. And besides, you're too short to be presidential. You don't have that Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, tough guy look. You know, you look like a little munchkin. So if there's ever a remake of, you know, The Wizard of Oz, you're cast, you know, as the dog. But otherwise, you know, you're not a Clinton Democrat, right? And so when you look at the absurdity, the human circus, the clowns that the Democrats and Republicans have become, then you ask, where do the progressives who are conservative and progressive who are liberal go? The trouble is they've gone nowhere. But I want you to do something. Are you near a computer now?
Yeah.
Okay. Go to Google and Google conservative radio. Then Google liberal radio. Then Google NPR radio. And tell me what numbers you're coming up with. And while you're doing that, I'm going to mention my guest is standing by, and we're going to go to my guest, Christopher Hellman, in just a moment. He is a senior research analyst at the National Priorities Project, which is a nonprofit organization with a mission to make the complexities of the federal budget more transparent and accessible to American citizens for the purpose of strengthening an informed and engaged society. And earlier, Christopher was a military policy fellow at the Center for Arms Control and Nonproliferation, where he specialized in national security, military planning and spending, and weapon systems and defense industry trends and homeland security. He also was an analyst for the Center for Defense Information and Physicians for Social Responsibility. And he's a journalist, and he's a frequent progressive contributor to Tom's Dispatch, Counterpunch, and Huffington Post. We're going to him in just a second. Now, did you go up there and do what I asked you to, Stephen?
Yeah.
Okay. What was the number for conservative radio? 41 million?
Either evil conservative radio or
talk
radio.
No, just put conservative radio.
Yeah, I did. It says evil conservative radio.
No. You're in California, and somehow y'all are a little disturbed out there. It should say 41 million. And if you go to liberal radio, just it's this simple, Stephen. Liberal radio. How about that?
I'm right here.
Okay, and it'll say 51 million, right? And then it'll list all the shows like Amy Goodman and Tom Hartman and Laura Flanders, all those, right? And if you do conservative radio, so Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Michael Savage and Mark Levine, all right?
Okay.
Okay, now do progressive radio that I founded 7 years ago.
You're just talking about typing it into Google.
Oh, wow, man. If you were in New York, you'd get this right. We're going to give you a pass. It's 92 million. So while you were saying there's no place for anybody to organize and go, and we don't have other voices, and we don't have leadership, yeah, we do. It's 92 million people Google for progressive information on progressive radio. So we are larger today than all conservative and all liberal radio combined. Without an ad, without an article, without a discussion, That's the power of information, seeking to break free of existing paradigmal limitations of thought and seeking positive solutions. That's why we want to engage the youth in this effort and engage those who are more idealistic but have not felt comfortable, because where there are some truths in all belief systems, they had to take all that was not truth and wrap themselves in that as well, and they just don't feel good doing it because they've seen it has not produced positive results. So now you have your answer. Let's go over now and say hello to Christopher Hellman. Nice to have you with us today, Christopher.
Thanks for having me.
Christopher, I'm going to ask you a specific issue here. I'm very concerned that nowhere is anyone talking about why do we need to spend $8 trillion in the last 10 years on military defense and security when we haven't looked at how much does it really cost to be secure, and how much of this is just going to major corporations aligned with those in power or previously in power at the Pentagon or somewhere in Congress. Could you go through this with us and explain the area that you have written about? Because I read your article and I appreciate your article.
Well, you're asking me to explain the unexplainable, but I think it's important to note that despite the fact that, you know, it's a hard debate to enter into, we are actually seeing some discussion of it, if only because the concern in Washington over the deficit has become so acute that they're literally looking at any option for how to get federal spending under control, and defense being such a large part of the pot of money that's out there, there is actually a little bit of discussion about how big a share they ought to be paying. So there is at least a glimmer of hope in that direction.
But what I've heard thus far is that they want to make some changes, but the changes they want to make over a 10-year period and do nothing to stop the increase in budget. They're just going to trim slightly here and there, but it won't really adversely affect the money the military-industrial complex gets each year.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we've seen as the Pentagon has cried poverty is what they've really been complaining about is slower growth rather than actual cuts. But the deficit deal that Congress signed off on before they adjourned for their summer break does have the potential of some reductions in defense spending. It's just not very much, and it's over a long period of time. So there are legitimate questions as to whether or not, you know, they will come to fruition.
I began to look carefully at this military-industrial complex budget and all of the on- and offline and associated amounts. And in one case alone, I found 10 separate private corporations that all were politically affiliated, all who had been given pretty much the same contract, and these were large amounts of money, to do the same work when only one was necessary, and yet this didn't seem to cause any unease, didn't cause any concern. Are we at a point where it doesn't matter who takes advantage of their access to power and getting these contracts, which have nothing in the world to do with really defending us, that we can just allow these people to get as much money as they can out of the system?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the Congress has done a fair amount of work to try and control the sort of earmarking of funds for you know, specific programs and specific elected officials. But where they've been unsuccessful in doing this is within the military budget, where, as you point out, you know, incredibly valuable contracts are let to politically influential organizations, and you know, it's not just the corporations themselves. They are very skilled at utilizing, for instance, their workforces as localized lobbyists. You know, when Boeing is in trouble on one of its contracts, it can you know, reach out to its 50,000 workers across the country and say, what's good for Boeing is good for you, and make sure your elected official knows that we need this program. And they're very effective at doing that.
But it still begs this simple issue: how much money do we need to be protected? And every time you hear Sean Hannity or someone say, oh, you know, don't touch our military budget, I'm saying, have you read the budget, Sean? Have you looked at what we are spending? And are we spending money in a way that would prevent terrorist attacks? Are we dealing with the problem? Are we just continuing to allow massive amounts of money to go into different private corporations where the majority of that money goes to the profit and maintenance of the corporation, not to really providing us with defense.
Right, and that's absolutely true. I mean, one of the phrases that the military uses to justify this type of expenditure is the phrase preserving the industrial base. And it's this concept that even though we may not be facing, major threats to our national security today, the future is uncertain, and we have to have available to us the means of production if, for instance, a new Soviet Union appears on the horizon and we have to ramp our military back up to Cold War levels. But it's a specious argument, and it's just elected officials find it very hard to stand up in public and say we need to cut defense spending, because they're then accused by pro-defense parties that they are in fact soft on defense, or soft on terrorism, or soft on communism, or whatever the ism is of the day.
I just find it unfortunate that we have right now 23 million Americans who have lost their homes. We've lost 5.6 million homes, 4 people per home. We're now facing, over the next 6 years, according to official statistics, 11.6 million home foreclosures based upon those homes being below value or underwater, and not a thing done to help any of those people, and no moratorium on home foreclosures. We also have 17 million children in the United States who go to bed hungry each day, and we are not helping individuals stay in their homes, feeding the children at least enough to keep them healthy and awake in school and from not suffering from malnutrition. These are not priorities, but making sure that those who are obscenely rich and powerful don't lose a penny and continue to grow. Is there something wrong with this scenario?
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, one of the things that has troubled me as we looked at the recent discussions on the deal that we were going to need to raise the debt ceiling was this idea that, taxes on the wealthiest Americans, that top 1%, allowing the Bush-era tax cuts to expire was something that was absolutely not on the table. And when you see, the kinds of problems that you indicate with regards to people losing their housing and the growing problem of poverty in this country, and yet the wealthiest are unwilling to, contribute a greater share to solving the problem, I think we have a serious problem.
Do you have a website that people can go to and get more information?
Sure. We're at nationalpriorities.org, and one of the things that we're focusing on is following the debate in Washington about the debt and the deficit and trying to explain to people just exactly what the significance of these things, the decisions that are being made on their behalf, really are.
I appreciate your work very much, and you had an excellent article that I read on Alternet on the $8 trillion on military addiction, why the price tag of the national security complex should scare the hell out of you, and by Chris Hellman, tomsdispatch.com. Good article. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
And just a little footnote to that, I spent 6 months analyzing detail by detail the money that we spend on our military. Right now it's about total, including Homeland Security, $1.5 trillion a year. I could not justify more than $200 billion maximum for our entire military-industrial complex. If we had people in office who had the courage to say, cut this to what we need and not a penny more, then we would save $1.2 trillion just there. Then cut away inefficient and duplicitous government redundancy, and you're dealing with another $500 billion. Stop the subsidies to the major corporations that don't need that, and you're dealing with another trillion. Gee whiz, we just came up with $2.5 trillion and didn't have to raise anyone's taxes and didn't have to cut any social programs. We're going to go to, I just saw Pat Dungson came in the office here. We're going to go to your calls, and sitting in studio also is Elizabeth. And Pat, quickly with you, Pat Duncanson is an extremely talented nutritionist, and she has a master's degree in clinical nutrition. I hired her. I pay her a nice salary, so she can work for free for you. She does not charge. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Gary.
You have someone on the line?
Yes, we do. Today we have Maria, and she and her husband have been very much helped. They had some extreme circumstances.
Let's say hello to Maria. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Gary. Good afternoon.
Maria, what condition did you have?
Well, mostly I had a problem with my knee, and I went to the doctor, and the doctor said I had to be operated on, or else take the injections after 6 months. So I said, okay, thank you very much. And I got home and got the Pat's number. I called her and went to see her. And I had excruciating pain. I could not stand up, sit down, or anything. In 1 week, with her protocol, I was almost good, 95%. And then, since then, I have nothing. My knees are great. I can't go do my yoga, my exercise every day in the gym, and I have no pain. So I have to thank her and thank you. Now, my husband has beginning of diabetes, and I went there, and I talked to her, and she put me in the right, route to for the food and the nutrition and everything. And I'm learning a lot with her.
How's your husband's blood sugar?
It's much better now. It's below 100.
And what was it before?
I asked the doctor to check the whole, everything, not only the sugar. And he said everything is fine. It is really good.
So reversing prediabetes, overcoming pain, and rebuilding the structure of the ligaments, tendons, and de-inflaming them. Well, thank you very much. Nice to speak with you.
Thank you very much. Don't
Maria.
Let Beth go anywhere, please.
Unless she asks for a raise. Yeah. Then she'll go through pain. Pat Duncanson. Thank you, Pat.
You're welcome, Gary.
And if anyone would like to get Pat, and she does not charge, she is free. I have hired 3 very qualified nutritionists to help you because I can't see everyone. I'm seeing as many as I can each day, but I work with just terminally ill people. You can reach Pat Duncanson at 212-874-4000. 212-874-4000. Now, Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon, Gary. We had a call from Tatiana from the Ukraine, who listens every day. She says that she's noticed an interesting phenomenon. How many people in the new generation, particularly men, are extraordinarily abusive to women. She said she didn't see this growing up, and she's 45 now, but now she finds it's extremely common. Her work takes her to areas like Bulgaria, around those areas in Europe, and everywhere you go, she says, you deal with massive corruption and really mean men, and women are virtually powerless there. She says, why is this never discussed in the USA?
For several reasons. When you're dealing with Bulgaria, Romania, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, Bosnia, Serbia, Croatia, you're dealing with Eastern Europe. And at one time, there were very powerful people who run those countries. So hence you had communities, towns, families, extended families, and you generally lived almost like tribes. In other words, there was a power structure. And overriding that power structure was official corruption. And all of communism was corrupt as far as how it relegated authority. In other words, if you had authority in the Politburo in your country before the Soviet Union was broken up in 1991, you were absolute powerful. There was not the kind of corruption we have today. There was not the kind of violence we had today. As an accepted practice. Today, you go into these countries, you can't go any place and do anything without coming into contact at some point with corruption and extreme violence. And she's absolutely right. The attitude has shifted where women are considered of no value and are disrespected. But it goes worse. Let me give you one example. In 1999, there had been the UN going in at the completion of the hostilities in Serbia and Bosnia, and there were lots of UN people there under private contract from a company in England, but it was given hundreds of millions of dollars to establish some coexistence. It was not to engage in conflict, but it was to prevent conflict. What became apparent very quickly was that there was massive trafficking in women. And unfortunately, most of the people engaged in that trafficking were the relatives or friends of the women. So let's say that you were a young 18-year-old and you were shown pictures of a hotel that you could go work in and make money at a seaside resort, and or you could act as a nanny, and here was the house, and they would show you all this. And so you got your passport, and this person took you and several other people, and you were always advised, come with a friend. So now 2, 3, 4, 5 women would leave town and drive, and when they got there, it wasn't any seaside resort, it wasn't a nanny, it was a bar. And in the room were 20 or 30 women sleeping on the floor, a hole in the middle of the ground for their bathroom. They were fed one meal a day in the morning. The windows were barred, and you had to work as prostitutes. And you were told that if you worked enough, you could work your way out. Of course, that was never the case. If you escaped, you were shot. If you were a troublemaker, you were shot in front of everyone. In fact, they pride themselves in shooting women in the head and killing them in front of all the other women as an example. See what happens? But they also, these were people who got you there who were family and friends, so they knew your family. If you escape, if you go to the police, then it won't do any good because we own the police, and indeed they did. So here's what was determined. The military, American military and military from around the world, were the ones who were engaged in trafficking of women. Actually, UN vans would cross women across borders. They're the ones who own the women. They made massive amounts of money. It was all about money, and it was utter and total debauchery. The UN knew about this. The High Commissioner for the UN knew about this. The Secretary of the UN knew about this. The head of the State Department knew about it. Because when one woman, who was a police officer from the out west, who went there because she thought she'd be dealing with a more elite group of people, she was on a six-month rotation and she was doing well, so she was promoted to head of gender, you know, women's issues. She found this happening and she did a whole report, and she found that all of her comrades, the police, were all engaged in the illegal trafficking. And it went clear up to the top. So when she went to report this, she was thrown out of the country. She was threatened, and she had a tape recorder, and one of the people said, you can't go to the State Department. State Department is protecting us. You can't go to the UN. The UN is protecting us. You can't go to any place. We own the police. We own the government. We own everybody. We pay off everybody. And they were right. So what did she do? Wisely, she went to the BBC. So the Commissioner, High Commissioner of Human Rights for the UN, was caught lying. Because he said there's never been one of our UN people in Bosnia that's ever engaged in sexual trafficking. That's not true. And then she played the tape recorder and showed all the pictures and showed the files which she had smuggled out. And it embarrassed them. But not one single person was ever brought to justice for murder. Our government routinely engages in murder. Our government routinely engages in every possible bad act in the world, and we protect those who do, as long as money's involved. And so that sent a message to all those people out there in that area of Eastern Europe: you can do anything you want in trafficking. Rarely will you get caught. You can buy any politicians. They're all for sale in Eastern Europe, and governments are for sale. And with the dissolution of the Communist Party, you don't have to pay a Communist Party boss anymore. Just pay your local, you know, gangster. So you go over there, you better have your eyes open and your mind focused, because otherwise you could get yourself in a lot of trouble. Doing business there, I will never do business in Eastern Europe. No, that's like sending a check to Nigeria, because you're going to get a check in return. Yeah, there's a big wake-up call about how women are treated in Eastern Europe, and the men are just out of control. I mean, and no one's paying attention to it. No one. Too bad. But the UN is the most corrupt, stupid little pathetic organization I know of. it's just abominably corrupt. And but no one will ever do that story, will they? No. Too bad. Hope that answers your question.
Thank you.
We're going to say goodbye to our land-based stations, continue on Progressive Radio Network, and Mel, next issue. You have another issue there?
Yes, I've got a thank you. This is lovely. This is from...
From Bosnia. From a gangster.
Yeah. Well, the women actually say, yay, good for you, thanks for doing
The women just ought to go out and just beat the hell out of all the men. See, just on general principle.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, no, they're criminal over there. They're absolutely criminal.
It's really scary, terrifying.
What, understand something. They will kill you without a thought.
God.
They have been raised without morals or ethics, and therefore they only care about the moment they're in and the power they have. And everybody in Eastern Europe has power over women. But we will never tell that story in the United States, because we would start showing the connections between how they do it, how they got away with it, and complicity of people within the UN, our State Department, our military-industrial complex, private contractors, and multinational corporations.
Right.
All right? Mm-hmm. It's not just sex trafficking. It's also work trafficking, where you indenture someone into working in a plant, sewing buttons on something for 14 hours a day. I got something interesting here. Political Science for Dummies, a Democrat. You have two cows. Your neighbor has none. You feel guilty for being successful. You push for higher taxes so the government can provide cows for everyone. Republican, you have two cows. Your neighbor have none. So? A socialist, you have two cows. The government takes one and gives it to your neighbor, and you form a cooperative to tell him how to manage his cow. Communist, you have two cows. The government seizes both and provides you with milk. You wait in line for hours to get it. It's expensive, but it's spoiled. Capitalism, you have two cows. You sell one, buy a bull, and build a herd of cows. Bureaucracy, American style. You have two cows. Under the new farm program, the government pays you to shoot one, milk the other, and then pour the milk down the drain. American corporations, you have two cows. You sell one, lease it back to yourself, and do an IPO on the second one. You force the two cows to produce the milk of four cows. You are surprised when one cow drops dead. You spin an announcement to the analysts stating that you have downsized and they're reducing expenses. Your stock goes up. A French corporation, you have two cows. You go on strike because you want three cows. You go to lunch and drink wine. Life is good. Japanese corporation, you have two cows. You redesign them so that they're one-tenth the size of an ordinary cow and produce 20 times the milk. They learn to travel on unbelievably crowded trains, and most are at the top of their class at cow school. A German corporation, you have two cows. You engineer them so that they're blonde, drink lots of beer, give excellent quality milk, and run 100 miles an hour. Unfortunately, they also demand 13 weeks of vacation per year. An Italian corporation. You have two cows, but you don't know where they're at. You break for lunch. Life is good. A Russian corporation. You have two cows. You drink some vodka. You count them again and, my God, you have five cows. You drink some more vodka. You count again and there are 42 cows. The mafia shows up, takes over however many cows you have, and you say, life's great. A Taliban corporation. You have cows in Afghanistan. And there's only two in the entire country. You don't milk them because you cannot touch another creature's private parts. You get $40 million grant from the U.S. government to find alternatives to milk production for use, but you use the money for weapons. Iraqi cow. You have two cows. They go into hiding. They send radio tapes of their mooing. And finally, a California corporation. You have millions of cows. They make real California cheese. Only five speak English. Most are illegal. Arnold likes the ones with big udders. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I'm Gary Noll. Have a nice day.
Yeah. Gary Null Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matthew Bogart. All shows are archived by Kyle Pollard. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride. And the program director is Jason Tappenfeld. Do